So the title of the talk this afternoon is Life is Free, But Why Not Me? And indeed, life is free, is open, is infinite, and is not personal. And we all know this, but we forget. Something in us knows this. We never completely forget. We do have even a memory of perfection, shlemut, maybe when we were a baby. And after we got mother's milk, is it perfection? Just life. Nothing is wrong. Nothing can be wrong. Until the next feed. So we have all the time hints, remezim, of our potential for freedom. It's all the time there in the background, even in the language, B'Tselem Elohim, that's a human being. So we're made of God stuff, even if we forget it most of the time. And we tend to stay with concepts of freedom, but not experiences of freedom. We tend to lose them, we don't know quite where they are, we don't know where to look for them, we need to work hard to try and fix things and try and get back to some perfection. And we can blame the universe for this. The universe creates life. Life in the shape of me. I'm a form, a shape. I'm trying to survive. The world is risky, dangerous, and eventually the world takes me to pieces again. I come from the world, I'm born into a life, I want to live and survive and continue and not stop. And whatever I do, the world invites me back again, whoop, back to carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, water, never mind what I do. So the world's making us and we want to survive and then we go back into the world again. There's no problem with that, except the self, me. I object. I don't want. I want to survive. I want to be here. I want to be the same. I want to be happy. I want to be okay. And something about the survival mechanism for survival builds a sense of me. Ahamkara, I mentioned yesterday, in the Pali language means the will, the construction of a me, of a center, of a organizing something that is busy trying to survive. We build a self as an entity that is pressuring to survive. We want to be happy. We want to be loved. We want to have pleasure and not pain. We want to live and not die. We want to have and not lose. And this is the universe doing it to us. These are the eight conditions. You can call eight, the Dharma of the eight conditions. It's like the biology of the Dharma. These pressures. And that we then interpret this, we experience this as all the struggles and patterns and psychological habits and the sense of life as Sisyphe, we're working all the time, and the sense that we don't quite fit, we don't know how to, we're not fitting into life. It doesn't work for us. It works a bit and then we lose it. And there's something there that is, in a way, the human tragedy, that ahamkara, we are created. The survival instinct makes a kind of a center wanting to survive and wanting something from life, and then we forget the freedom. There is a nice story, a folk story, about a man, and you may have heard this maybe from me or from others before, but it's a nice story. A man goes to a tailor and wants a suit. And the tailor says, sure, I'll make you a suit, no problem. So he measures him, and then he says, come back in a couple of weeks, it'll be ready. I said, okay, he comes back in 2 weeks, very excited. And he puts on the jacket, and it doesn't fit. The one sleeve is long, one sleeve is short. So he says to the tailor, look, it doesn't fit. The tailor says, never mind, if you walk like this, if you stand like that, it'll be all right. So, and the buttons are not the same. He said, never mind, if you walk like this, then the buttons will be lined up and everything is fine. But the trousers don't fit. One is long, one is short. He said, never mind, if you walk like that, then it'll be fine. And everything is tight here. Never mind, if you stick your tummy out, it will work. It'll be okay. So he put on the suit and he went into the park. And there were two people sitting on the bench. And one said to the other, oh, this poor man, look at him walking. What a poor cripple. Neche. And the other one said, yeah, he's neche indeed, he's a cripple, but he's got a lovely suit. And it's a beautiful story, but it's a tragedy. It's a tragic story, because the suit that doesn't fit us is us. We wore it. We are inside it. And we are, in a way, limping through life. The suit is a hatnaya. Just think of all the makot that we have had in our life and what they do to us, where they sit inside us. Hatzalakot, the wounds, the scars we've received in this years creating an adult. And that's the suit. We wear it and we fit ourselves in it, and then we go out into the world and try and struggle, and we feel we've got to fix the world, we've got to fix ourselves. And it feels very real. I want to read a piece from my book, which I read all over the place. This one piece, so maybe you've already heard it, but I do think it's a kind of essence of the Dharma. And it was written exactly because of this situation, where a woman called me one day in tears. And I was in grandparent duty, so I couldn't talk to her. There was kids all over me, and I couldn't talk to her. But she was crying on the telephone. And she said, I can't bear it anymore. I feel that all my life and all my education and all my training and all my conditioning has shaped me into a distorted. She was exactly saying the suit. I feel distorted. I feel I don't fit anywhere. I don't fit life. And I said, look, I can't talk now, but I can give you one sentence. I'm in the middle of many trees. I'm in Klil, and there's many trees, olive trees. Do the olive trees cry because of their shape? So, and I thought about that later, and I wrote this piece, which is in the book. Would you like to read it? If you have your glasses or whatever you need. Okay, it's from there to there. Ani.
אני גר באזור בו צומחים עצי זית רבים. הם בעלי אופי אקספרסיבי להדהים, המראה בבירור את כל מה שקרה להם. ענף שנחרט, כיווני האור והרוח ביחס לעץ, מחסור במים, כל אלה באים לידי ביטוי בגופו של העץ, בפני הגזע, בכיוון צמיחתו, בנשירת העלים. צורת העץ היא הזיכרון שלו, הסנקרות שלו, התגובה לנסיבות. העץ לא סובל מכך, זהו הטבע, וכך גם אין שום סיבה שהזיכרונות יהוו בעיה עבורנו. אנחנו מעוצבות ונבנות בידי החיים. אנחנו מקבלות גוף והוא מתפתח ומשתנה באופן דינמי בהתאם לתנאים. אנחנו מגיעות אל כל רגע כפי שאנחנו, העולם מופיע מולנו ופוגש אותנו כפי שהוא, וכל שעלינו לעשות הוא להבחין בצורתם של הדברים ולהניח להם להיות עצמם. סיפורים הם רק סיפורים, נרטיבים הם רק נרטיבים, מה שמתהווה הוא רק מה שמתהווה. אם נרפה וניתן לזרם החיים לשאת אותנו, הפצעים ייעלמו, המקומות המצולקים יתרקחו, והחיים ישובו לזרום דרכם. כך נוכל לצאת מכלא האתמול לגן ההווה. חוויה קשה יכולה להופיע כמו אורח גס רוח בביתנו ולגרום לנו לבכות, אך ברגע הבא נתחיל לפתע לצחוק והאורח ייעלם.
So the Buddhist path, the Dharma, totally acknowledges our basic freedom. It is founded on Nibbana, our total freedom. It's founded on perfection. Perfection is not Shlemut, is not something which is beyond the beyond and just only monks that have been practicing for many lifetimes can even imagine it. It's a truth, it's the third noble truth. So the Buddhist path acknowledges the totality of freedom, but doesn't really give it names because it's not in the realm of conditioning. So Nibbana, for example, as a word, just means going out, the flame going out. It means going back to the universe. It means joining again the totality. It means like the baby came from the universe, we can be in the universe. So Nibbana is cooling the fires, fire going back to the fire. So there's something about it which is released from the form, taking off the suit, undoing the suit, taking it off, throwing it away. But most of the Dharma, as we see it as a path to liberation, is not about what is liberation, because again that brings us into all sorts of concepts and views and ideas, and the self turns it into a thing, but it's about what are the obstacles. Why don't we know it 24 hours, this freedom? Why do we feel like this woman in prison? So the practice of the Dharma is basically very, very simple. It's not about concepts of freedom. It's about a way to see freedom. It's about seeing. It's about, as I said, irut or mudaut, awareness. And there's something about it which is awareness that cuts through the forms and the illusions and the constructions. It's an awareness like a knife that cuts through all the bullshit. Cut the bullshit! It's not thinking about. I know that we're sitting here, many of us, thinking about. I know that right now when I'm talking, you're probably thinking, it's okay. But the path to freedom is not in the world of freedom, of thinking, it's not in the world of hoping, it's not in the world of more constructions called everything's great. It's calling things by their true name, as Thich Nhat Hanh says. It's not about dreams, it's not about blankness, it's not about being in the sky, it's not about airiness, it's not about I am a cloud drifting across the sky. It's a beautiful song, I know. It's basically about attention to what is liberating, where we put our attention. Instead of putting our attention on what is imprisoning us, it's putting our attention on what is liberating us. That's the whole Dharma. Put our attention on what is freeing us all the time. The Buddha said, keep bending your mind to freedom. The Chaven. So that really when at the beginning, when I said, the beginning of this retreat, when I said it's not so important what we experience. And many of you may be thinking, yes, it is important. I need to experience happiness. I need to experience calmness. I need to experience okayness. So, oh, yeah, I said it. All right. But it's not so important what we experience. What's important is the consistency with which we bend our mind towards our freedom. The way that the kviut, the way we keep there. That's all. We don't need to be heroes. Like Osho said, why be a hero when we can be a zero? We don't need to be heroes, but we do need to be consistent. Morning, evening, middle of the day, go to bed, get up in the morning. Keep bending our mind to freedom in this retreat and in our entire life. That's all we need to do. It's not even so crucial what we practice. But we need to have that consistency. There's a Sufi story about this, about a man in a prison, and he was locked in to the cell, Ata Shalom. And he wrote to a friend saying, can I send me a gun or a hammer or a screwdriver? I want to undo the lock and get free. So a parcel arrived. So he was very keen. He opened the parcel and said, wow, great, I've got some tools. Now I can get out. And there was no tools there, but just a prayer carpet. Shatiach la tefila, who was Muslim. So he was very angry and he threw the carpet in the corner. But then he had nothing to do, so he said, well, I might as well pray. So he undid the carpet and started to pray 5 times a day to Allah. After a while, the first time he noticed the carpet had a pattern. Woven into the carpet was a pattern. And he looked very, very carefully as he was close to the carpet, and he realized that the pattern woven in the carpet was the design of the lock that imprisoned him. And so he was able, through the pattern, to open the door and go out. So our freedom is not in a hammer to break the door of our prison, of our conditioned mind, but to see how it's made and to undo it through seeing. Seeing the pattern, seeing how it's made, seeing a little bit more subtly, adin. How to open the box, how to open the prison door. How to cut through the filter. Our mind is a filter. Our mind is a masanen, is a filter. Most of what our mind is doing is actually censorship. We get rid of almost everything we experience, except those things that interest us. So our experience is very, very minimal. very, very small. Just think how much space there is in this room. Okay? This room is 99% space. And 1% you and me objects. But who pays attention to space? Nobody. It's not interesting. So we need to cut through the mind that is a filter and is shaping, is like the suit, is shaping our condition. So I want to talk about how we do this. The Buddha said there's only, as Ilan was saying yesterday, the only place we can do this is in the heart of our experience. The Buddha said you cannot look for our liberation in any other place. You don't need to look for liberation in any other place except what it is that we experience right now. And that's a hope, that's a hopeful statement, by the way. It means we don't need to look for and pray for liberation from somebody else or something else or a God on high or the Pope or the Rabbi or the Dharma teacher. We don't need any of that. And it's a hopeful statement. It is available, this freedom. We just need to see it's in the heart of our experience. So in other words, we can take off the suit. We just have to see ourselves under the suit. What's under the suit that we're wearing? So what's in the heart of experience, the way we can look at what we experience that brings us a sense of freedom is three aspects which I want to just go into, which are really crucial or important teachings. And that's the three characteristics, or the three, in the Tibetan call it, the three seals. Seal is a chatemet, or chotem.
Chotam.
Chotam. So the first is dukkha or difficulty. That's exactly what I was talking about before. We have to understand that difficulty or dukkha doesn't belong to us. We all feel it's me or it's mine or I've done something wrong or why am I punished or I suffer or my life is difficult. Difficulty is in the nature of things and the nature of experience of all beings. Every ant, every haidak experiences dukkha. And not all the time, also sukha, joy. But we can't avoid dukkha because of the pressure to survive. And the dukkha can be many different kinds. We can be really, really, really happy and fine and life is great and so on. But there's going to be subtle dukkha of yes, but, aval, ani tzirich, ani chayav, chaser li mashu, I want this. Shifa, I want to go there. I want to change something. I want to fix something. Subtle dukkha is the dukkha of the suit, conditioning. Like the woman said, I don't want to be my shape. Atsura, I don't want to be my shape. Conditioning that is the filter of the mind, that doesn't see the big picture, but just sees what the habit of the mind. That's also dukkha. It's also a difficulty, also a pain. And it can be the strong dukkha of loss and tragedy and physical pain and disease and so on. Underneath dukkha is pressure to control. The basic pressure to control things. I need all the time to control something. And that's control is dukkha. But dukkha is our teacher. The Buddha said, dukkha, when we work with it, it becomes the source of our search, our chipus. Just like the Buddha himself met dukkha in the street, and that created his search, the motivation, the urgency, and dachuf, to find what's like Iyov, the book of Iyov. Pain can be for us the key. Say, I can't take this anymore. I'm going to get to the bottom. I'm going to cut through. I can't take this. I'm not going there anymore. Finished. So for us, in daily practice, dukkha can be our teacher. It shows us, we sit here, we have a pain in the back. We sit here, we are bored. Shi'imum. We sit here and we want to run away. We sit here and our mind is going crazy. We sit here just dreaming of, the ice cream, Tel Aviv, whatever. Knowing that as our voice of dukkha, seeing that voice, seeing that that's our place of pressure, that's our place of control, that's our struggle with ishlemut, imperfection. That's the voice we need to hear. So when we experience just the ordinary experience of moment by moment, dukkha is a voice that we need. When it's there, we don't need, if we're happy and just sitting quietly and in deep peace, we don't need to, where's the dukkha? Where's the pain? Oh, I feel okay. Nothing's wrong. I don't mean that. But I mean, when dukkha is there, we need to see it as a teacher and not as a problem. So shi'imum, for example, boredom, restlessness, body pains, they are not problems. They are not the struggle of, I'm not meditating because I'm bored. Boredom is the meditation. Because we're meditating, we exposed boredom, which is the malbush, the suit we wear. Let's look at it. Where does that come from? What's it saying? What's under it? Who am I that is bored? Who's bored? Bored with what? How is boredom? What is underneath boredom? What's the voices that you're subtle, that the boredom is telling me, is under it? And where is non-boredom? Are my hands bored? What's bored? My fingers? Where is boredom? What is it? How is it? So dukkha for us is an invitation to cut through the usual conditioned mind. And then, when we do that, we can discover anicca. Anicca is changeable, arayut. Anicca is important because it tells us that nothing lasts, nothing stays, nothing, the whole of life, everything is in movement. Achan Chah had an image of the one seat, Kisei Echad. He said, every thought that comes in the mind wants to come in and sit down and stay. But there's only one seat in the mind, and I'm sitting on it. So there's nowhere for it to stay, so it has to go. It's a very beautiful teaching, because what hurts us is that things seem solid and real. Boredom, pain, difficulty, a psychological loop in the mind, fears, resistance, anger, atspanut, irritation, anything that's giving us pain, it gives us pain because we see it as something, davar, something that disturbs us. When we look carefully, we see there is no something. Everything is dynamic and everything is free, meaning everything goes by itself. There's nothing we need to do to let things dissolve, because they are gone before they arise. If we look even something like, I said, boredom, it's so dynamic, it's changing every second. Anger, it's dissolving as it arises, it's all the time moving, it's nothing is stuck. The self, ani, ha-ani, thinks that things are fixed. I am like this. I want to stay like that. I want to be like that. Or I don't want to be like that. The self does makes constructions, but it's not in life. So when we see the truth of things, the three characteristics are the deep truth of, in the center of our experience. We understand we don't need to fix anything. It's a beautiful understanding, because it all goes anyway. There's nothing to fix. There's nothing to fix. It's such an amazing insight. I can tell you this 1,000 times. It doesn't work. No one's going to believe me until you experience it yourself. But I can tell you again, there's nothing to be fixed, because it just goes by itself. Gone, gone, gone. Ending, ending, ending. I love the, and I did look it up in the Tanakh, when Moshe wanted to see God. And God said, I can't, you will not see my face. If you see my face, you die. But he put him in a rock, which I think is like a retreat. Put him in a cave, in other words, and said, you can see the back of me. You can see me when I've gone past. And I think that's lovely, you know, sit in a retreat and you can see things when they go past. They fly by. Everything flies by. And there's something in that that is very quiet. It's like the quiet, even though it seems movement, if we just, in that dynamic, we're quiet. Because things pass by, then we just sit quietly and watch the world pass by. It's like I spent one time in, when I was second time in India in 76. I was teaching in Banaras Hindu University, BHU, in Varanasi. But actually I spent most of my time next to the Ganga. And the students were really pissed off with me. They wanted me to teach, and they wanted me to go into the Mahabadot there. I was teaching biochemistry to students at the university in Varanasi. But the students had to come and find me on the banks of the Ganga. And they didn't really like it, because I was English, I was a professor, etc. But I was wearing a lungi, not suit. I was wearing a lungi sitting next to the river. Anyway, there was one period of 3 months when myself and a couple of Indian friends, we decided to spend more or less 3 months watching one rock in the middle of the Ganga. We just decided, that's enough. Just there was a Ganga and then there was one rock. And we spent 3 months more or less looking at this rock. And there was two birds that were sitting on the rock. They were, I think, cranes. Agurim. But the rock was very small, so only one could sit on it at each time, so they kept changing places. One would go fish, and then come back, and the other one would go. So they kept like this. And 3 months we watched the birds, one going off, one came, one going off, one came, one came, one came. And that was it, that's what we did. It was amazing just sitting there watching this going on. Plus also the few other things happening in the crazy life of the sadhus on the banks of the Ganga. You can imagine Varanasi, what goes on. At least I think it still goes on, but at that time for sure it was crazy, wild, spiritual party going on all the time, 24 hours. But very seriously, if we experience the world through the senses, because there's no other place to experience the world, if we experience the world through the senses, the eye, the ear, the tongue, the touch, and the mind, which is a sense, and the smell, and the mind. If we experience through the senses the movement of everything, actually it brings us to a deep quiet. But if we catch things with the senses, we want to fix them, we want to hold them, we want something, we want to get rid of them, we need them. The senses are bringing a chain of results, a chain of busyness. Then we are stuck. And then we are caught. There's a beautiful quote from the Buddha that says this. For some people, contact, the point where sense meets an object, hachushim, pokshim, objektim, where sense and object meet, for some people this is captivating. This is muksam, is spell, made a spell on us, right, muksam? Maxim. It's not Maxim, it's we are enchanted. Muksamim. Muksamim. Okay. And so they are washed by the tides of being, by the waves of being, drifting along an empty, pointless road. Ooh. Very dramatic and frightening. But others come to understand the activity of their senses, and because they understand it, the stillness fills them with delight. So I'll read it again in the English. For some people, contact, the point where senses plus object meet, it's captivating. And so they are washed by the tides of being, drifting along an empty, pointless road. But others come to understand their sense activity. And because they understand it, the stillness fills them with delight. It's from the Sutta Nipata. The third of the three characteristics is anatta. And in many ways you can understand this, and we're going to be talking about it non-stop this retreat. And you'll just, lots of anatta teaching will happen in this retreat. But one way, anatta means an is not, and atta is self, or in Sanskrit, atman. So it means not, no atman, or the non-atman, or the non-self. And you can see it just many ways we're going to be looking at this, but one word that might help is, you can call it transparency. Shakuf. Shkifut. That we struggle because of the self that is trying to fix things, to survive, to be in control, to resist, to want, to need, to be in charge, to make us happy, to get what we need, and so on. So the self is operating all the time. And when we look carefully, we see through it. And that's a hugely liberating understanding. And everything collapses then. We don't need the suit anymore. It just disappears. The suit that makes us a neche, that is trapping us, there, is just gone. One quote of a Western sort of Taoist teacher says, why are we unhappy? It's because 99% of what we do is for myself. And there isn't one. So, if we look carefully, the self is manifest as a center, as a boss, as boundaries, as ownership, as in charge. But really what's happening is there's just conditions that arise. And does reality belong to me? Everyone, when you really ask this question, will say, no, reality can't belong to me. But we behave as if it does. And we are sure that it does underneath. But if you ask, does reality belong to you? So we're living in a lie, actually. We're living in a hashlaya, in an illusion. I mean, just take one small example, comes up. We go for a meal. We go to a restaurant. We are under the illusion that this is for me, this meal that I order it, I choose it, I go to the menu, tafrit, and I want this, and I pay for it, and I like this, and I'm gone there. But that's one moment that we're busy called me, with me, and what I want. We have no concept, we don't know all the whole universe made this meal. And all the universe made me go to this restaurant right now. And after we eat it, the whole journey of the food, it goes in the mouth, it goes in the digestive system, it goes out, it goes into the kaki, it goes into the sea again. We don't want any of that. We don't want to know about that. We don't want to know about the food before it got to us. And we don't, even just when it's gone in the mouth, we don't want it to think about it anymore. Finished. Our sphere of interest, the self, has taken one tiny little piece of a whole process and made it the thing called food. Even after it's entered the mouth, if we sort of take it out, it's horrible. I spent $100 on this meal. Look at it. It's just ichsa. We don't even the digestion. We don't think of it as my digestion. Stomach. Bavakasha, do the rice now. We're not in control of digestion. Stomach, now is the turn of the bread. Okay. We can't fix things. We can't make things stable. We can't know things. The self wants to know everything. The self wants to know what's going to happen. The self wants knowledge. How much of the day we're busy with the masachim, with screens? Information in making as if it makes us more happy the more we know. We're not in charge, we're not in control of that. So this understanding that the self is really a construction like anything else. It's a kind of a illusion, a magic. Is free. It frees us. We don't need to be in the prison of self. So what happens when we see even little bits of this? Well, we just take something very, very simple like shi'imum, or something like anger, kaas, or something, just my back is hurting, or thoughts that come, anything, any place. If we see, if we cut through the construction of it, through seeing dukkha, anicca, anatta, something there in the seeing, we become bigger and freer. We are not imprisoned by the conditioned mind. The seeing cuts it. We become the awareness, the toda'ah, the mudaud, the awareness, the knowing, the understanding, the seeing, the erut, makes us bigger than our experiences and freer. I mean, anger we think is so strong and is so powerful and so dominant, I don't know how to deal with it. It comes and goes, comes again and again and again. But if we look and see, anger is made of many conditions. It's painful, but it comes from the universe. It comes from the world. And there's no one really at the center of it. Three characteristics. The anger is dissolving, is dissolved. We become bigger than the anger. So in this retreat, we're going to be paying more attention of the three to anatta. But they're all going to be there and they're all helpful to us. And if something touches us and we discover anicca or discover dukkha, it's fine. But we're just going to pay a light attention to anatta in this retreat because often it's quite a mystery. And we want to give it some real attention. So this retreat, day by day, will be exploring the creation of self and the dissolving of self. How self is created, built, constructed, and how we can see that it's made of nothing, even though it feels maze solid. But if we look carefully, we can see that it's transparent, it's shakuf. But one thing, again, I need to say and remind, we see it not by the illusion that it doesn't exist, but we see it by meeting it as it really is. When we meet it as it really is, then we're not being a self. We are seeing the self. And seeing the self is freeing us from it. Whatever we see, we are bigger than it. So when we see the self, we are bigger than the self and freer than the self. So it's okay to see the self, not to believe in anatta, no self. To see the self is like the instructions this morning. I really like the word hineni. And Yahel said today that there's a song, which I haven't heard it, from Leonard Cohen. Yeah, hineni, which it's a beautiful word because it's God that asked Abraham, where are you? Who are you? And he said, hineni. So it's God that asks us, who are you? Our God, our bigger place. And we answer, hineni. And it's a beautiful answer. Hineni is being clear. Here I am. Yes, this is the self arising. We meet the self arising and we say, hineni. And then what do we do with that? We begin to see reality as more free, more playful, less personal, bigger, without constructions. And what do we do then? We just dance. That's all. We just dance. So I want to finish with a quote from American Buddhist teacher who really is asking this question, let me see the self. It's called, she's called Anam Tupten, and the poem is the Last Koan. Koan is question or riddle, chida. Why am I here? This has been a gnawing question for a long time. But do not ask anyone to answer this. Too many beliefs out there. Didn't we just kill the great mystery? The scientists, the believers, the philosophers, don't listen too much to what they say. There's no merit for messing up your head with man-made ideas. But just tonight, stay awake for a while. Gaze into the sky, the infinite cosmos, and the magic of existence will open your mind. Your heart will feel a sweet surrender. Aren't you everything? You are the celestial body with countless stars shining brilliantly. You are the beautiful flowers in this whole world. You are the majestic mountains all the way from Everest. You are the gentle dolphin swimming ecstatically in the sea. You are the unbelievably adorable hummingbirds who hold the spell of charm. You have never been born. You are here all along. You are here to see your own wonder. And now you can rest for searching for eternity somewhere else. Why am I here? Keep contemplating this forever. Otherwise you will become finite. And fear or ambition will steal your joy. In the East, people have been chanting the sacred word Om. If they really knew what it meant, they would dance without control. Om. Remember, it means I am everything. And let your body whirl like a child playing. So let's just take a minute of quiet. Nadav.